All right, there's a trend with older American homeowners. And that trend is that people are downsizing. And what I mean by downsizing is that they're moving out of their traditional, like, where they've been, their home, that they spent a lot of time with, they raised their kids. And once they get to a certain age, they uproot themselves and go to a smaller situation, okay? And I've got friends, I guess you could say mentors, that have downsized over the course of the last 10 years. And so I've seen this happen. Now, from looking at my family, and when I say my family, I'm talking about my family here locally and then my family in other parts of the country, specifically the South, it's always been a thing of where they were living and raised and settled. Those homes that they purchased, that's where they were till they died. That's just how it was. My grandmother, my grandfather, on both sides of the family, that's how it was. That essentially, though, is not necessarily the case anymore, according to a survey by Redfin, a tech-based real estate brokerage. Now, a lot of American homeowners do plan to stay in their current home and age, but times have changed with regards to the downsizing. Now, a woman by the name of Lauren Bednar, owner of Oasis Senior Advisors, she says that I don't think it's feasible for anybody to stay in their home throughout old age. There are very few that can make that actually work. I think that that's an interesting quote and comment that she made. I know that downsizing has kind of become a thing, but do we think that that will continue to be a thing? Or do you think that it's just a current trend? Because when we start looking at the economy and, you know, people living, well, I guess when people are older and they're retired.
You live a little more frugal.
That, as well as trying to stay rooted in where they've been for so many years. I've got a couple of friends that sold their homes in South Minneapolis, and guess where they moved to?
Same neighborhood?
Condos in downtown.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
To get out of bigger houses into smaller accommodations in the city. But that's still cost.
Yeah, I think that's becoming more and more popular.
It's fashionable right now.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, once you become these quote-unquote empty nesters, the kids are out, you don't need all of that room. You don't need the four bedrooms, the three and a half, four bath, double car garage. You don't need all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's the perfect opportunity that, yeah, if some people want to downsize, I think it makes sense. And ultimately, if you want to relocate, it's like your chance to go to the next phase of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not necessarily retire, but just like, you know what? I've done everything I can here. The kids are gone. We're just going to go someplace different, someplace new, start a new adventure. But I've seen the downsizing, and I think it's great because, you know, it used to be like, oh my God, the 80s, 90s, everything's so much bigger. And now it's, you hear people can get by with less.
Well, 651-461-9226. Your thoughts on this? Because the Minnesota Star Tribune, they noted some lessons from a downsizer. The first bullet point that they talked about is don't wait until a crisis. For many baby boomers, aging in place is a noble goal. But for a demographic that's already dealing with so many other unwelcome changes, including fragile health and limited finances, it's not always a realistic option, which is something that you just kind of like touched on. The other part with regards to the downsizing process, the first step is because for some people, you think about going into these senior care facilities. I know this from friends of my mom and dad. And I actually, there's one of my mom's really good friends years ago. Her husband passed away, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago. And they lived for the longest time in Bloomington. Now she has sold her home because her daughter is married and she's got a grandchild and all that stuff, whatever. She has a small apartment in Bloomington. And she's right in an area where she has restaurants right by her. She's got the grocery store right by her. She has all the amenities and stuff that she needs right there by her. And she doesn't have to go anything to want for stuff.
Your priorities change as you get older. Like when we're younger, we all want the big house with all the space. And, you know, we want to have our man caves or our she sheds. Or
I think that's going to be me. I think I'm going to be the person that I'd like to think that I'd be into the downsizing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Because like my mother passed away 20 years ago. My dad is in the house. And I think, I've never asked my dad this, but this is, I know my dad just all too well. I think my dad is just like, no, I'm going to die in this house.
Is this a house that you guys have lived in for years?
Yeah, I was raised in it, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's, and I can understand that because there's so many memories and it's part of your identity. And I mean, I can understand from your dad's perspective.
It's home.
It's home. Mm-hmm. It's where he's most comfortable. It's where he is at ease. And there are some people that if they are so attached to it, I have no problem with that at all because it gives them comfort. There are some that, you know, the idea of downsizing, I mean, it's not just going from a house to a smaller house to a tiny house to an apartment. Like, you've got all of your belongings. Like, you're going to have to get rid of some. Do you reorganize? Do you sell? Do you donate? Think of donuts. But what is it, like, what is it that you're going to do with all of your belongings? And to me, I would think that would be one of the hardest things for people when you're thinking about downsizing, because you've got all of these things that you've accumulated and you don't want to hoard them, but you just, it's such a difficult decision deciding on which things you want to get rid of.
Yeah. I know for you, this is going back to a conversation that we had like 3 years ago. You guys wanted to try to find a new spot, but you were like, with the market and stuff like that, it hadn't been feasible for you to try to get into something.
No, we're still renting, and we're content where we're at. We would have loved to have been able to purchase by now. But yeah, with the market and inflation and interest rates and everything, like, we are not going to make a purchase just to make a purchase. And our daughter is going.
Because when you make that purchase, that's where you want to be.
That's where you want to be. I mean, we have now, I mean, our attention has now shifted to, do we want to buy a house where our daughter, we're going to be there for 3 years before she graduates? And then do we look at downsizing? Because we've already started to discuss, okay, what are our retirement plans? And I mean, that's, you know, 15 years down the road. But yeah,
I'm never retiring.
When
I'm done here, I'm gonna be one of the greeters at Walmart. Or something.
Yeah, you can't. You can't not hustle, man. Like you're all over the place. You are all over the place. You just got that. You just got that grind in you. I mean, I've got the grind, but then I'm like tired as hell. I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I get tired. Fat people like me get tired. Okay. Fit people like you keep going.
Wait, wait, wait. Now you're fat? You're calling yourself fat? Why would you do that, man?
I don't know. Look at me.
Gosh.
No, I'm not fat.
Look at you being mean at yourself.
I'm not fat.
Don't do that to yourself.
Just big boned.
All right, 651-461-9226. You know what time it is? Bite of the Night. That's next year on The Lake Show. All right, before we get to Bite of the Night, we got a quick phone call to get to from Kent in Minnetonka. He wants to check in. How you doing, Kent?
I'm good.
What you got for us tonight?
My call.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm just saying on the downsizing. So if the other dynamic is with the economy, if you're in a house where your children grew up, sometimes with the economy the way it is right now,
yep,
all of a sudden your kids want to move back in, and then you become more of a kind of one of the cultural sort of households where in other countries the family comes first and you all live together,
yep,
share expenses and take care of your elders in a larger house and share expenses and also take care of each other. So
yep,
it's an interesting kind of
dynamic
to say, yeah, instead of downsizing, you kind of stay where you're at. You know, a lot of people have kids moving back into their house these days just because they can't afford a place of their own. So,
yep.
Anyway, that just...
Yeah, and thanks to the phone call from Kent in Minnetonka. And actually, to be honest with you, when we start talking about, I think that Kent brings up a great point, is that when you start looking at everything that's going on today with the conversation around caring for your parents...
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a big thing now.
Well, and I mean...
To be caregivers.
And, you know, some of these assisted living facilities, they're not cheap. I mean, they are... My in-laws have been toying with the idea of coming up to live in the metro to be close to, you know, my wife and I, just because the health care up here is top-notch and the access to amenities is top-notch. But you look at it and... I mean, Kent's right. It's like there's no way that a lot of these places are affordable for people that are on a very fixed income. So it's a valid point. It's got its pros and cons for sure.
Yep. All right, let's get into the Bite of the Night. All right, the Bite of the Night comes from David Fahrenthold. He is a New York Times investigative reporter. And, you know, one of the things that we have to continue to talk about and think about in this world with the new Trump administration is what the hell is DOGE doing? Like we can sit here and we can talk about government waste here, there, and everywhere. But what actually is the Department of Government Efficiency doing? What is Elon Musk actually doing? Well, the New York Times have some damn good investigative reporters. And they have, and they've been citing it on social media over the course of the last 3 or 4 days, that Elon Musk states that he's doing things for the American people, and he's not really doing a damn thing. He's doing all of us a disservice. He's lying to us as Americans, saying that he's going to help eliminate waste in our government, but he's not doing any of that. Take a listen to this synopsis, okay? And just listen closely to it from David on stuff that they are finding out with regards to item line notes that Elon Musk says that they have flagged, that's problematic, but then when called on it, actually admitting mistakes that are made.
Doge first posted its list. We found problems with all five of the five largest contracts. The largest savings that DOGE claimed to have made on its initial list was an $8 billion savings from a contract cut at the Department of Homeland Security. When we looked at that, we realized the actual number was 8 million, 1/1,000th of the claim that they had made. DOGE responded by saying, well, it was an error in the federal contracting system, but they should have known better. And the reason they should have known better is that this contract, this supposed $8 billion contract, came from ICE. Its entire budget is $8 billion. Going down the list, the second, third, and fourth largest savings on Doge's original list were all basically the same error. What they did was triple count the same cancellation, all with the U.S. Agency for International Development. And what contracting experts told us was it wouldn't have been right if they just counted it once. That's because this contract had been out there for a long time. A lot of the work had already been done. So much of the money that had been allotted initially had been spent. The fifth largest savings on Doge's initial wall of receipts was $232 million they said they saved by canceling a contract that the Social Security Administration had. When we looked into that, we realized that there was a cut there, but it was only $560,000. So after we and other news outlets wrote about these major errors, the Doge site was updated, quietly, to remove all of those top five claims. But its new version contains other errors. The new largest savings was a $1.9 billion savings. But when we looked into that, we realized the contract they were talking about had actually been canceled last year under President Biden. And when you look a little further down the list, you see that Doge is claiming credit for contracts that expired even before Joe Biden was president. In one case, the Department of Homeland Security is claiming it saved tens of millions of dollars by canceling a contract that actually ended in 2005 when George W. Bush was president.
2005? They're trying to claim stuff that happened in 2005. We've said it once. We'll say it again. Doge is not a real thing that they're trying to push on the American people. And some Americans are accepting of it. When we talk about money that's supposed to get appropriated through Congress, there's a lot of stuff that's being tossed out there by Elon Musk and even by Donald Trump that's not actually real when you're talking about these buyouts. None of this stuff's been approved.
No.
So, people, let's all be educated and let's all be cognizant that there's a lot of stuff that's thrown in our faces that aren't real.
I think I get the impression, Henry, that if they throw out numbers, the blind trust and loyalty to Donald Trump and this administration, I think that's what they're banking on. That is what they are hoping people, well, if Elon found it, then it must be true. If he's telling us this information, then it's got to be true.
I don't trust Elon Musk for one second.
I don't think a lot of us do. But there are some that are out there that no matter, again, if they say we found this waste, fraud, and abuse, which right now are the buzzwords. And I only know it because I see it constantly. If we keep hearing that, the American people are going to be conditioned if they're not really listening to what it is that they're finding. Because they've been asking, people have been asking, okay, what have you found? What have you found? If you say you found it, then what have you found? Well, you found this. Yeah, but what you say it is, if you look underneath it, it's not this big savings. But again, they are banking on people just not paying attention.
Well, the other thing that bothers me so much, and this is the reason why we as individuals, we have to have our thinking caps on. We have to be able to diagnose and see when somebody isn't who we thought that they are. Like Elon Musk, and everybody wants to claim that he's a genius and this thing. He's never created anything, okay? Nothing. He has just used his wealth to buy things that other people created. But when he stands in front of cabinet members, and when he says stuff in front of cameras that, well, there's going to be mistakes. We're going to make some mistakes. I don't want to hear that. I don't. The American public, people are concerned about groceries, gas prices. We are concerned about a lot of different things. I'm not saying that everything is going to go flawlessly. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is don't tell me about all of the stuff that's bad and you're going to just take a chainsaw to everything and oops, I'm making a mistake. Like the Ebola stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that came up last week.
Cut off the funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And Amy Klobuchar called it out. Dude, we don't have time for that, man. Get to work. Don't tell us that you're going to be constructive, that you're going to be constructive with all this stuff, and you're not doing a damn thing.
To cut it, Henry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, just Doge, get to work.
You're going to say, to cut it recklessly and go back and have to fix it and say, oops, my bad?
Yeah, oops, my bad. Which is every week now.
That is the opposite of efficiency. Like, if we want to be efficient, then we need to, do we know what the word efficient means when we're talking about it in this sense?
Because he's not working efficiently. And one thing I'll say here, and I don't want to take credit for this, but I did read this somewhere. And I just think it's spot on. The United States is the only place on earth where poor people shun labor unions, free health care, and free education because rich people tell them to.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why we've got this sense that just because somebody's got money, we need to listen to them and just feel like they've got our best interest. How are they like us? How is Elon Musk like most of us who are sitting here listening and talking and part of this conversation? How is Donald Trump like us in terms of just having to deal with the day-to-day of our life?
I think that the one...
Steve Jobs like that?
I think that one of the most disappointing things that I've seen over the course of the last week are these town halls where these politicians are in front of their constituents, and when their constituents start kind of giving it to them a little bit and saying, hey, hold on, this is not – we're not telling you to fire veterans and this, that, and then just leave the room. They just leave the room.
They walk out on their constituents.
They walk out on their constituents.
And I mean, Mike Johnson has gone on record, Speaker of the House, as saying these are paid Dem operatives. Can we stop with all that crap, with all this? Oh, they're paid. Maybe you've just got upset people that realize that their lives are being upended and they're mad and they want some sort of response. They want an answer. People want an answer as to why their lives are being upended and benefits are taken away and things that they rely on are being removed and making their lives harder.
And by the way, from the 320, someone saying Doge is more or less doing the same thing when people just stop paying a bill. Doge is doing the same thing, but calling it savings. They're actually not doing the same thing, because one of the things that has taken place with the new administration, there's no independent inspectors. They are firing all these people.
The IGs, yep.
The IGs are not in there right now.
Because that's problematic. Because they were the ones that
Why would we not want oversight?
Why
would we not want oversight?
Because these inspector generals are the ones that are supposed to be overseeing. They're the guardrails, right? Like, they are the rules. So you're getting rid of the rules on what? The basis of it's not efficient? So it's just like, the source for Elon is, trust me, bro. No, not going to trust you, bro.
Yep. All right, coming up next, we'll take a look at the local weather. And it's been a while since I traveled internationally. But, man, when you're coming back through customs, don't get a fine. You better check your luggage. I'll explain that next year on The Lake Show. Be careful when you are bringing things back and traveling internationally, because things that you would be like, huh, what? Well, why am I in trouble with U.S. Customs? The littlest of things will get you fined. A gentleman by the name of Dylan O'Byrne from New Jersey. He's a New Jersey native, actually. He lives in Nashville. He returned from a trip in Southeast Asia, and he accidentally didn't claim something coming back in with regards to customs, and he got flagged. Okay. Because he says he never buys anything on trips, maybe a trinket or two for friends, but not anything I would need to declare. Well, he goes to baggage claim because his flight went from Singapore. It landed at JFK in New York. And when he went through customs and was asked if there are any items to declare at the time, he said no. So he's at baggage claim. He's there. His parents. He's tired. He's thrilled to be back in the States. Only to be stopped by Border Patrol agents while trying to call an Uber. He said police dogs were sniffing around his luggage, and the officers were asking if he brought anything prohibited back. After his family's denial, the dog sat next to his bag. And he said he was like, what could this dog have possibly found? Well, I'm looking at the picture here. The dog sniffed out a banana. A banana.
Banana. Was it laced with LSD?
The Border Patrol agents confirmed it was before scanning his passport and informing that he would likely face a penalty. At that point, he says, are they serious? You're joking, right? No, they weren't joking. He said he looked into it, and even a banana can get you banned from global entry and a $500 fine. Now, he didn't know at the time whether he was going to face punishment or not. But it sounds like this is because he would face a punishment for bringing a prohibited item into the U.S. And so according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the U.S. prohibits most agriculture products from entering the country due to the risk of pests and diseases that could impact the environment in the States. I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I understand why.
This is helpful. I understand it. Like, it makes sense, whatever. Especially now with Kennedy and, you know. But you get my point. Like,
was the banana vaccinated? That's my question. Nobody wants a vaccinated banana.
But now, he shouldn't get fined, right? This was just the honest mistake.
No, yes. I mean, I'm sorry. The dude got a banana in Germany because he was hungry and he put it in his bag. I mean, out of all the things you have to declare, oh, guess what? What do you have? Yeah, I'm a grown man and I have to declare my banana. Like, that, it's just, it is, I understand why, but again, I think with context, I think you can look at some individuals, and I think just talking with them, you would understand that maybe there's not anything nefarious going on. But I guess in today's day and age, anything that looks suspicious is going to be suspicious. But he got flagged for a banana.
Yeah.
That is wild. I hope it's just one of those.
Gotta be careful, man.
I know. Man, I guess if I ever go to Puerto Rico, I'm never coming back for some coconuts. we're having that in the Caribbean.
I can't tell you the last place I went to internationally.
Man.
It's been such a long time.
Yeah, it's, I think the last time I was, we were on a cruise, about 10 years ago. I think that was about
it. You've been on a cruise?
Oh, yeah.
I've never been on a cruise in my life.
Dude, I'm terrified of open water. I don't know how my wife talked me into it, but it was like a late honeymoon. I mean, it was fun. We went to like Turks, Caicos, went to Puerto Rico. We purposely got like disconnected from our travel party because you know how you stay on some of these. It's like, oh, we got to stay on this. It's like, I wanted to see what the real San Juan was, and I wanted like authentic, you know, Puerto Rican food. So we went to like these little dives and it was great. It was absolutely great.
So that's the only time you've ever been on a cruise?
Yes.
Yeah, I could do without it. There's a lot of things I want to do in life. Getting on a cruise was not at the top of my
list. But I gotta be honest, like when you're on a boat and you don't realize it, like half the time you're doing so many other things, you don't even realize that you're on a boat. And again, like, open water scares the hell out of me. Like, I'm terrified. Like, Jaws is, like, the worst movie in the world because just, like, I see that water and I see sharks and I'm just like, no, I'm good. But I went.
U.S. Customs and Border Protection spokesperson Anthony Bucci said, told the publication that while the agency cannot discuss the details of individuals' inspections, states, quote, all agricultural items must be declared and prohibited items are confiscated. More importantly, civil penalties may be assessed for failure to declare prohibited agriculture products and may range up to $1,000 per first-time offense for non-commercial quantities. If the items are determined to be for commercial use, violations will be assessed at a much higher rate. It's one banana. So I don't think my man's trying to, trying to profit off of the one banana.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that, you know, TikTokers were like getting on him. I mean, believe me, if you make a mistake in today's day and age, people love to tell you how wrong you were. But it's like, yes, they can carry bugs, diseases, impact our agriculture. We know all of that when you've got a non-native being or a bug or something that would come into, you know, into this habitat. Just completely it was an honest mistake.
And to put this into some historical context, according to the CBP website, what fruits and vegetables are allowed into the U.S. depend on a number of factors, citing an instance in the 1980s when one piece of contaminated fruit brought back to the U.S. spread a fruit fly outbreak that cost millions in cleanup. My goodness. No wonder there's so much a stickler. Millions in cleanup?
I get it. This is one of those things that maybe they should make a little more public. Because if he didn't know about it and you and I didn't know about it.
I know about it now.
I know, yeah. And I'm sure there are people out there like, well, I didn't know about it. But then there are probably people out there like, yeah, I knew about it and you guys are idiots. Which is also true.
Coming up next, it's headlines. That's next here on The Lake Show. Hey, quickly before we start headlines, this text from the 320, the food thing is on a questionnaire on the plane. When you're near landing back in the U.S., he was given a clear chance to report it. What if he forgot that it was in his
because it wasn't, forgot when it was in his bag?
Yeah, because it wasn't on the carry-on. It was in his checked luggage, right? So what if he just forgot? I don't know. But I'm just saying. What if you just forgot? It seems innocent.
It does. At least on the surface, it seems innocent.
Am I really going to look at the guy and think that he's trying to get way over on everybody for a banana?
You seen that porn stash? He looks like he could. he's got a banana in mind for something, okay? Just saying.
Oh.
He looks like a guy who knows how to party with a banana. Hashtag just saying.
Wow.
Hey, you knew it was coming. Minnesota's traditional March tournament storm is coming this week. Though for most of the metro, it will end up being mostly a rain event. Yes, because no disrespect to the Masters, this is truly a tradition unlike any other. While today, gorgeous day in the 50s, the other shoe drops tomorrow on Wednesday. National Weather Service does have a winter storm watch out for parts of Minnesota and western Wisconsin tomorrow night into Wednesday. We should see some March snow, according to WCCO Chief Meteorologist Chris Schaefer. But before that, he says it's going to be wet. Overnight tomorrow is when it starts to shift. He says snow amounts won't be much, but what comes with that snow is going to get your attention. Schaefer says the snow is likely only 1 to 3 inches in the metro, but the big concern isn't the heavy snow, it's the wind. He said it'll be 15 to 25 miles an hour from the north, so where it snows, there'll be whiteout conditions, possible blizzard conditions, poor visibility mainly during the overnight. Says that means a tricky commute Wednesday morning. It's also going to be that wet, heavy, typical March snow, which could keep the blowing to a minimum, especially in the metro area. But to expect it to be very sloppy. Now, if you're coming into the Twin Cities from the north for the Boys State High School Hockey Tournament, Schaefer says don't sweat it. Since this storm is coming up from the south, it won't impact travel at all north of the Twin Cities.
You said 1 to 3, right?
Yes.
I'm going to text my dad at the top of the hour.
Uh-huh.
Because my dad, he's just a terrible weather person. He was like, oh, I'm hearing it. What do you say over the week? Oh, looks like we're going to get 3 to 6 inches. I was like, what?
Maybe it was at
but
the
like,
beginning.
But when it was super warm, yeah. I was like, what was it super warm on Saturday? It was a little bit chilly on Saturday.
But
I was
a little
like,
bit chillier, yeah.
I was like, 3 to 6? Yes, what they're saying. I'm like, all right, Dad.
Maybe it was 3 to 6 and it's tapered down. But I think kind of like the old school in you is like, I want this thing to wreak hell on everything. I mean, I don't want to because it's state tournament time, but, you know.
Yeah. I got you.
All right. Hey, an Illinois man pleaded guilty today to killing 7 people and injuring dozens more when he opened a fire on a 2022 Independence Day parade in Chicago. A stunning development moments before opening statements in his trial and murder and attempted murder charges. According in a Lake County Circuit courtroom, 24-year-old Robert E. Cremo III withdrew his earlier non-guilty plea in the Highland Park shooting. Prosecutors initially charged him with 21 counts of first-degree murder, 3 counts of each person killed, as well as 48 counts of attempted murder. Prosecutors dropped 48 less serious counts of aggravated battery before jury selection last week. Now, last year, he was expected to accept a plea deal and give victims and relatives a chance to address him publicly, but he changed his mind at the last minute, shocking even his attorneys. He even fired his public defenders. He said he would represent himself. Then he abruptly reversed course. As potential jurors were questioned last week, he sporadically appeared in court, at sometimes refusing to leave his jail cell. Sentencing is going to come on April 23rd, but Cremo is certain to spend the rest of his life behind bars. Each count of first-degree murder carries a maximum natural life prison sentence. Prosecutors said survivors would get the chance to address him at the sentencing, but he didn't address the court before leaving the courtroom. His public defenders did not address reporters after the hearing. Security was tight at the courthouse with bag checks and observers required to lock up their phones. Change of police shocked those gathered in the courtroom, including survivors and their families. Trial was expected to last about a month.
Yeah, I still remember this situation when it took place.
I do, too. Very vivid.
Because, yeah, it was you know, Independence Day a few years ago, and it was just a parade. These people are just, you know, observing. They're at a parade, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's just shooting up the parade. It's just despicable human being he is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Terrible.
Hey, Kroger chairman and CEO Rodney McMullen has resigned after an internal investigation into his personal conduct. Kroger, the nation's largest grocery chain, said Monday that the investigation into McMullen's personal conduct was unrelated to the business, but was found to be inconsistent with its business ethics policy. Board member Ronald Sargent will serve as the chairman and interim CEO, effective immediately. Now, the 64-year-old McMullen began his career with Kroger in 1978 as a part-time stock clerk, a bagger at a store in Lexington, Kentucky. Worked his way up through the company, becoming chief financial officer in 1995, chief operating officer in 2009, named Kroger CEO in 2014. Now, Kroger is going to conduct a search for his next CEO, it looks like, I don't know if part of this was just because of the Albertson merge that didn't come together. Albertson sued Kroger, saying it had failed to make every effort to ensure that the merger would win regulatory approval. But the judges halted the $24.6 billion deal in December.
Yeah, but it says his personal conduct. Internal investigation into his personal conduct. So it's more than just, you know, a merger failing and all that stuff. It's like something else is going on.
These big CEOs, man, they just think they can get away with anything. Hey, and
not all of them.
No, that's true. Just the bad ones. Hey, Pamela Anderson has won a Razzie she can be proud of. Winners of this year's award for the best of the worst in cinema, known as the Razzies, were announced Friday, and Anderson won the Razzie Redeemer for her performance in The Last Showgirl. Now, the Golden Raspberry Awards, the formal name for the Razzies, celebrate what they view as Hollywood's movie duds. In keeping with its history, the winners are announced annually ahead of the Academy Awards ceremony. Madame Webb led this year's Razzies for 3 wins, followed by Joker, Folie à Deux, Megalopolis, and Unfrosted with 2 apiece. Megalopolis director Francis Ford Coppola took the Instagram on Friday morning and said he was thrilled to accept his award for worst director writing in part. Quote, in this wreck of a world today where art is given scores as if they were professional wrestling, I choose to not follow the gutless rule laid down by an industry so terrified of risk that despite the enormous pool of young talent at its disposal, may not create pictures that will be relevant and alive 50 years from now.
So do you have any issue with him taking a shot at wrestling?
No. No, because people that rate wrestling matches are stupid.
Okay.
Just enjoy it.
Are they better than the people that judged the Lamont Roach Tank Davis fight over the weekend? Did you hear about that debacle?
No, I didn't.
It sounds like somebody got robbed.
Oh, really?
Like a boxer cannot take a knee,
mm-hmm.
pop up, and then get his face wiped down, and you don't take a point from him. Like,
oh, dude, yeah, that's pretty obvious.
Like, what are you doing? Crazy.
Yeah, that sounds like wrestling.
All right, coming up next, the reality that nobody wants to talk about and admit, but we're going to address it right here.